Welcome to episode 44 of the Better Band Bureau podcast.
You're listening to the Better Band Bureau podcast, the number one online resource for DIY bands to learn about the music business and touring. If you want to turn your band into a lean, mean touring machine, you're in the right place. Now, let's get this show on the road.
It is time for another episode of the Better Band Bureau podcast. My name is James Cross, and I'm here with Matt Hose of Alive in Barcelona. How are you today, Matt?
James, I'm doing pretty wonderful. How are you doing over there on the east side?
That's great to hear, and things are good here. It's finally getting to be more like fall. Even though it's only September 1st, it feels wonderful out here. And I'm also super stoked because we have a very special guest today, Aaron Zimmer of Least of All Sound Recordings. How are you today, Aaron?
I'm well, thank you. How are you guys?
Nothing to complain about here. It's like I said, it's great over here, and it's a real pleasure to have you here because I think what you are doing with Least of All is really unique, and it's something that is giving a little power to artists to do unique, one-of-a-kind recordings. And so we're going to dive deep into that. But first of all, let me just explain for the listeners what first piqued my interest about Least of All. And it's this thing that you have called shut-in sessions, which basically, for those of you who haven't heard of it, is you send in files to Aaron that are one of a kind, and each one of those files is pressed to a record or lathe cut to a record for a specific person. So this is all done on a pre-order basis. It's limited run, unique to every single order. And I think that's so cool because especially now with Spotify and streaming in general, it's kind of made music a commodity, and you're going back and saying, no, it's not a commodity. Music is unique, and we're going to change that. Aaron, just jumping right in, can you tell us a little bit about how Least of All started and what your inspiration there was?
I'd love to. The label was actually founded as a booking agency. In my younger years, I was a touring musician, and as my time as a touring musician was coming to a close, I was trying to think of something to do, some way I was going to pay the rent. You know, I'd spent 10 or 15 years on the road playing shows and building relationships with talent buyers and bookers and festival buyers and all sorts of touring folks. And I thought, well, if I can do it for myself, I can do it for some other people too. So I just started doing that and built up a pretty good roster. It was just me in a dingy, tiny office in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I think we had around 25 artists. They were doing 1,500 shows or so a year. And it was truly just days full of spreadsheets and calendars and contract negotiation. And it was, you know, as much as I love music and as much as I loved touring, it was just a dismal existence. I hated every piece of it. I really just did. And around that time, I was discovering that these old record lathes were out there and was really interested in that, interested in learning sort of the history and where they came from and who was using them when they were made. What were their uses? What were their intent? So I found one on eBay, of course, and just went to work trying to figure out how to make it cut a record. I always tell people, I bet I cut 5,000 records, bad records, before I got one good one. The arc on it is just brutal, and it took me years just banging my head against this lathe on my, you know, kitchen table. And so I sort of figured it out, and I was trying to think of ways that I could use this skill that I had. And I knew I didn't want to go into, you know, short run lathe cut production work. There's plenty of folks out there that are doing brilliant work with that. I just didn't want to go into competition with that. Short of the Voiceograph booth at Third Man Records in Nashville and Detroit, I couldn't find anywhere in the world where you could walk into a place and perform and leave with a record. I thought that was amazing and brilliant on its own. And so I thought, well, let me just try that. Let me see. And so I put together the pieces to the puzzle, you know, designed a center label and all the stuff. And the initial label project was, we called it Office Sessions. It was literally one ribbon microphone and the cutter in my dumpy office in Bushwick. The first office session was with one of my good buddies. And so we did it. It was cool. We did a few more and a few more and a few more. Eventually, we put a submission page on the booking agency's website and started taking in submissions. And as I got busier with that, I was simultaneously shrinking the roster so I didn't have to work so much in booking and growing the amount of equipment and space that I had. The studio is sort of hopscotched through Bushwick, growing into bigger and bigger spaces with more equipment and people. And so I guess it was maybe a couple of years ago, maybe just a year and a half ago, that we were able to get into the studio that we're at now, and I could build a staff around the project and just and really go for it. And so we did that, converted the name to Direct to Vinyl Live Sessions, and we set out to put together these pre-order pages, these pre-order campaigns with the artists so that they have all the tools and assets they need to properly promote this recording session where they're going to come to my studio. We're going to mic them up. We're going to get levels. By the time the band shows up, we'll have all their orders in so we know every record we need to cut and who it's for. We get good sounds. We drop the needle, toss up the faders, and the band says, "Hey, Matt, thanks for your support. Here's this song you ordered. It's take number 4. Hope you love it." And then they play it. While they're playing it, we cut the record, put a label on it, ship it. That's it. Before the pandemic started, we were, gosh, I mean, we were doing 3 sessions a day every day. Just busy, 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 busy. I guess that's maybe the long version, not the condensed one, but that's the history of how it started.
That's really cool. And I think it's also, it shows the entrepreneurial mindset that you have, because not only did you learn a new skill and then say, how can I make money from this? And while you're also adding value to the artists because they have something unique, but then when COVID came about, you again pivoted and turn that from something that you can't do during a pandemic to something that you can do during a pandemic.
Yeah, it was a really scary time. I mean, for my company, just like it was for, you know, millions and millions of others. I mean, I was really terrified. We were hearing about, you know, of course, the studio's in New York City, so it was even worse there right away. And we were just hearing, and every day it got a little bit worse. There was a day and then 2 days and then 3 days where there were absolutely zero sales that day. And I was sitting at my desk and trying to remember if that had ever happened before. And I just knew that it hadn't. I knew something was up because these artists, they had these sessions and all of a sudden their tours were canceled and they were headed home. They're not promoting. They're trying to figure out how to eat, right? I got it. I totally understood. You know, I have staff. I have people that I care about that I adore the work they do. And so I had no idea what to do. I really didn't. And then I was laying in bed in the middle of the night. I just had this idea about what would become Shut-In Sessions. And I struggled with it because the whole idea, what makes the record so wonderful is that they're cut live in real time. We're actually carving the grooves in while the band is in the live room playing. I really, really love that. But that was going to be impossible. So what do we do? So what if we have the same exact model, but we allow the artist to record in the safety of their home while they're shut in? Who cares what the recording sounds like? Who cares if they don't have a pro setup? Who cares if it's an iPhone video or iPhone voice memo? The idea is just to capture a moment in this wildly strange time in the universe and cut it to a one-of-a-kind thing just for the one person. And so I started there. It was probably midnight. And by 2 a.m., I had worked through in my mind all the pieces to the puzzle, and I just got up and got to work on it. And at 6 a.m., I sent over our director of operations, Emily. I just sent over this packet, like, here's this, what do you think? And we batted around a couple of names for the program and made a couple of adjustments and then got ready just to announce it, just to roll it out to the artist database, the mailing list that we have of artists. There's thousands of artists in there. So we just sent that out and we put it up on our socials and just crossed our fingers. I think we set up 50 sessions that very first day, or maybe it was the first 2 days. So that was great. It was a sigh of relief, not only for us, but these bands that were trying to figure out how they were going to get their rent paid. Everybody had an opportunity to, regardless of where they were in the world, since they had nothing else to do other than stay home and stay safe, everybody had an opportunity to make a little bit of money when they desperately needed it. And so we did it. And as the pandemic continued, we just continued. And here we are. I mean, it's been such a rewarding program that we're just going to keep it open indefinitely. I don't have any plans to close it up. My thought was it would just be live while the pandemic is crushing everybody, but we may keep it around. I really love it. And I love it because of the recordings that we've heard come in. Like I was saying earlier, I mean, we've had people go to their studio and record, make their recordings to tape. We've had lots of iPhone voice memos. I heard a session's worth of recordings that were just done outside in a field. I've heard countless recordings that you hear birds chirping and cars driving by. It's just so magical to hear people making music in that way. And then on a format that's so novel and strange, you would never hear a record like that unless you were Alan Lomax traveling the world and capturing music genres that had previously been unheard. Alan Lomax is another rabbit hole, but I just really love the magic that that created. And it's been really rewarding for us, and I hope for the artists too.
Yeah, I know an artist, Troy Millette, who did a shut-in session back in, I want to say it was April or so.
Oh, cool.
He spoke so highly of the process, and that's why I decided to reach out to you to do the interview.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. That makes my day when the artists have a positive... I mean, we work really hard to make sure that is, and that is the case for everybody, and the system, the protocol is super duper buttoned up, so we make it real easy for them to have what they need. Pre-order closes, they go do their thing, and when they're ready to give the audio, they send the audio in through an easy setup, and then we pay them right away. We just get it checks out right away. So I'm really, really happy to hear that.
Well, that's great that you have such a fine-tuned system, and while you're talking about that, can you give a quick rundown of, you know, start to finish, what a session for an artist would look like if somebody listening wants to go and sign up for a shut-in session? What's the process from A to Z?
They would go to our website and they'll navigate to a page called Shut-In Setup or whatever it's called, where they can learn about how it works, learn about how they're going to be paid and what they need to do. And then they just send in an easy list of assets. And those include artist name, we need a photo, the list of songs they'd like to make available on their pre-order, all the simple stuff. That gets sent to us. We do a little bit of vetting with the submissions that come in just to... We let a lot of folks in, most everybody. If an artist is a real person that can respond to an email and clearly is a musician out there trying to work, we'll let them in every time. So we get the stuff, we build a pre-order page on our website and send all the info and assets to the artist with some promotional tips that are tried and true. And they go to work for a couple of weeks just promoting as fast and furious as they can. When the pre-order closes, they'll get a final list of their orders, the person, where they're from, the song they ordered. And then they go to work making the recordings. When they're done, they come back to us. They upload through us a portal on our website, and that gets put into the queue for our producers to cut. And then we cut them a check right away. Then the records, we have all the files. We have everything we need. We can cut each record and we ship them from the studio. And that's it. Simple as that.
That's a really beautifully simple system, because that just makes it, you know, the artist basically has two jobs, promote and record, and that's it.
That is it. And purposefully so, we wanted to make the protocol just as bulletproof as we could. You know, we knew we were going to do some volume. And so we, just because of the scale, we couldn't mess with like, okay, well, this person just sent us a Dropbox link and this person has a WeTransfer link and this person emailed the files and this and that. Like, it's all very funneled and good and organized.
Yeah, that sounds like it would be an absolute mess if somebody would be sending those. We actually did an episode just a couple of weeks ago about using one system for file transfer and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So if anyone's listening and you want to check that episode out, if you go to thebetterbandbureau.com/44, that episode will be linked there. I can't remember off the top of my head which one that is. But before we go further into depth about shut-in sessions and least of all, just a few quick FAQs that we think artists will be curious about. Matt, do you want to go through these real quick?
Yeah, sure. You know, and some of them you've already answered in your absolutely wonderful description of what you do. first off, I just want to say, I love your model.
Thank you.
I'm a firm believer that memorabilia is something that left the music industry quite a while ago.
Agreed.
And I think you're creating more than an experience and you're creating memorabilia. And as somebody who's worked as a merch person for a long time, I know that that is so much more of an intimate... It's way better than a t-shirt. It's way better than a CD.
Yeah.
It's an intimate, one-of-a-kind thing. So I think that's awesome. So I wanted to say that before I jumped in.
Thank you very much. I love it too.
But so you've already answered, the first question is, how many songs can you put on one record? Which I think you already mentioned, and that it's a single track per record cut. That's correct?
Yep. We get that question a lot. And there's sort of a long-winded explanation for that. But the shortened version is, it's a record that's got one song on it. Yeah, we could put two on it. But that doubles the amount of work for the artist and for my team. And to do that means we have to charge more.
Right.
We put a lot of time and thought into finding the correct price point for what they get. And so my argument to that is, one song that was recorded and made specifically for you and cut to a record that only you and the world have is worth every penny. We don't have to bake in more value.
Perfect. I completely agree. As far as pre-sales go, you know, you mentioned that you're a pre-sale model, so... Your artists are, you know, going to be promoting this. Do you have a threshold for the minimum number of pre-sales that you need to do for a printing session or a lathing session or whatever the correct term for that is?
No, that's kind of the beauty with shut-in. No, there is no minimum. We've had artists that sold one. We'll cut it. Who cares? There's been a few artists that have sold more than I even want to admit. We had one artist, I think the top seller sold almost 300 of them, you know, taking months to make all the recordings. But no, there's no minimum. None at all.
Okay, excellent. So that's really cool too, because, you know, for our listeners out there, this is a really easy ground level entry point for you to start developing true relationships, true quality relationships with your fans. And that's something that James and I have talked about a lot over the course of the podcast. So I really, really like that. If, like you said, somebody sells one, we'll make it. And so that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's such a huge value add into people's lives.
The reason that's possible is because it's such a simple process in relationship to how records are typically made. Typically, you have to cut an acetate and then you make the stampers and then you do this and you do that. And you can't order less than 100 because it's not worth their time to do all those steps. Whereas this, the step is the same for every record. So it doesn't matter if we make one 5-minute song or 100 5-minute songs. It'll take us the exact amount of time.
That's a recipe for success. So I love that. As far as your work, we know that you work with artists inside the U.S. Do you work with artists around the world as well?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you the percentage of international artists that have gone through the shut-in program. It's not nothing. There have been a lot from Canada and some European artists as well. We pay their royalty a little bit differently because, you know,
different laws.
Exactly. But yeah, anybody is welcome. And for the live sessions at the studio, yeah, we've had lots and lots of international artists come through. It all is based upon their touring. I would say, gosh, 60% of those sessions are touring artists that were already in New York anyway. And that could be anybody in the world.
Excellent.
Yep.
Side note, that's just, you know, for all of our listeners, that is the perfect way when you're touring is to be setting up things like that during the daytime, you know.
Yeah.
These are perfect ways for promotion. So, you know, for anybody listening, take that note and store it for a rainy day, because when you're on the road, you should absolutely be using your, like, there's no such thing as downtime. Downtime is a fake term when you own a business.
That's right.
You can either be working for your business and doing nothing or working on your business and becoming better. So sounds like you've been doing this for a while. You've been fairly successful. You've been able to adapt in an ever-changing market. About how many shut-in sessions would you say that you've done so far? Rough guesstimate.
It's approaching 600.
Wow.
Somewhere, last time I looked, it was 550, and that was a week or two ago. So approaching 600.
Wow. And that's of all different numbers of printing.
Yep.
That's absolutely incredible.
Yep.
So sounds like you've been keeping pretty busy for these last while.
We're in the weeds. I'll admit that to you. We are.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's a good problem to have.
All right. Well, Matt and Aaron, thank you for the back and forth there on the FAQs. If anybody has a question that wasn't answered, you can head on over to leastofall.com/pages/FAQ. That's leastavall.com/pages/FAQ. And you can find more answers there. And if you still don't find answers, there's a handy contact link right there as well.
Yes. And one of the things I've been working on recently is sort of our customer service connectivity and just being really good at answering questions, because we get a lot of inbound inquiries. If you go to the website, you'll see there's a little chat bubble. And I'm telling you, that is me on the other end of that thing. So fire away with your questions. We have answers for you.
All right. That's great. Live chats are the best.
Yeah. Unless I'm in my car, then I can't answer you.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a little email collection thing for when you're not online so you get an email?
Yeah. 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 It does all that stuff. Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. I can't tell you how many times, if I've had to decide between two providers and one has a live chat and the other one doesn't, I go with the one with the live chat, even if it costs more. I'm just like, I can hit them up anytime or at least, you know, 8 hours a day and be in touch with them right away.
Yeah.
That's a rabbit hole for another day, but
okay.
Live chats are great.
Maybe I could be on that podcast. This stuff's interesting to me too.
Yeah, we might have to have a systems episode for artists, and I feel like you could bring your systems knowledge from the business and your experience as an artist.
I will love listening to that episode for sure.
Awesome. Diving back into things, it sounds like it's pretty basic what you look for when you're seeking out artists or when artists come to you to do a shut-in sessions. But to maybe go more into depth with that, is there a common thread between the artists who have had the most successful sessions? Is there something you think that all the successful artists did the same way?
Oh, good question. Well, beyond the real obvious ones, I mean, an artist that has that clearly has their stuff put together. This isn't the first time they've promoted. They know the drill. They know exactly what to do. That, of course, helps. I sort of think this kind of product and any kind of merch and any kind of support for independent music has everything to do with the relationships that the artist has forged with their fans before they sign up. There's just too much music for the music to be the only piece to the puzzle that's important. I really, really believe that. And I think to help further that point, there's just no way to tell on a shut-in session. You can't just size up an artist and know, oh, this person's going to sell a lot, this person's going to sell none, because you'll be surprised every time. So that tells me it's got nothing to do with the photo. It's probably got nothing to do with the music. It has nothing to do at all with how many Instagram followers you have. It has everything to do with how much effort you've put into making a relationship.
That actually goes back to what you and I talked about two episodes ago on number 42, Matt. It was how to, first of all, grow a massive Instagram following, but keeping your fans engaged. Because I would personally say, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, an engaged following that's small is way better than a large but unengaged following. There's no connection there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because the followers that aren't engaged might as well not be followers at all. They are worth nothing to an artist if the like or the follow has been paid for or gleaned in some way other than just, you know, a natural, true, authentic way.
Yeah, exactly. For anyone listening, if you want to learn more about gaining authentic followers, you can head on over to thebetterbandbureau.com/42. That's the number 42. And listen to that episode. And then come back and re-listen to this section of this episode, I think, because then there'll be a better understanding of how you can jump into a shut-in session and be prepared for it, is what I would say. Is there something you see that really helps artists stand out in the way they prepare for the pre-sale for shut-in sessions?
Yeah, there's a couple things. First and most importantly, and maybe this is another rabbit hole for another podcast, but the artists that do best are the ones that have taken the time, first of all, to read the information we give them and to process it and understand what it is they are doing. If they don't have an understanding of the product they're trying to sell, there's no way they can sell it, especially when it's as weird and unique as this one is. So read an email. Like, there's been a lot of these sessions where we get all the way rolled out and the artist doesn't know what they're promoting. And it's only just because they haven't taken the time to read and to process information. So that's number one. And number two is, geez, the artists that do what they say they're going to do and are accountable and responsible and timely, just like any job that you expect to be good at, they do better. It's no different than being good at anything else in life, just to really try.
Yeah. So to boil it down, it sounds like the first one is just attention to detail. And then the second one is reliability and accountability.
Discipline.
Discipline. That's another really good one. And I don't have the reference because I can't remember the name of the book, but I read a book about copywriting because I was frustrated. And this is way back in my booking days. I was frustrated that people don't read emails. People don't read copy that you send them. So I was trying to learn the tricks to deliver words that take the least amount of effort to process. And to that end, the information that we send artists is just as fine-tuned and dialed in as you can get. So I don't think on our side we can do any better than a short, concise paragraph that explains and hope that the artist will read it and understand it before they get signed up.
Yeah, that's definitely something when people see a wall of text, their eyes just glaze over.
Yeah, no, I get it.
It's unfortunate, but that's what it is. Going deeper into what you see for the future of Least of All, obviously the shut-in sessions are going really well, and I think it's a really cool idea, but you've also seen how your relationship with artists has changed over the last few years from being, you know, a booking agency to doing in-person sessions to now doing remote sessions. Over the next 5 to 10 years, how do you envision that things might change as far as your relationship with the artist? And obviously, we don't know what the future holds, but I'm sure you have some thoughts about adding further value to these artists' lives.
The sessions that I cut, the relationships that I have the opportunity to forge with the artists that come through the studio, by and large, are always really, really good ones. I love nothing more than to see artists come back and listen to how their careers have grown and what they've been up to in the last year that they've been out doing their thing. So, I mean, a personal goal would just be have more experiences like that. See artists go from, you know, relative obscurity into doing really, really good things. It's really gratifying to know that I got to work with them before they were huge superstars. That's cool. I don't know if that's a good answer to the question. it's the best one I have on the fly.
I think that's definitely a good goal. And I think that is a good answer because it shows how, really how artist-focused you are and how artist-focused least of all is.
You have a human relation, and I think that's really important. For me, like, I'm very utilitarian, so I like things to be simple, easy, laid out, formulaic. And, you know, it seems to me like you've worked on trying to, you know, take an intimate, unique experience and make it as easily accessible. You're creating a moment for them. And that's what I find is so special about this. It's not even necessarily that, you know, like, yes, you will develop this awesome relationship with an artist and probably better so with the ones whose music you like and who have a good work ethic. But really, your business is creating something special for other people. And that, I think, is so awesome. And that really, I mean, you are in the business of relationship building.
Yeah.
You know, you don't make money if artists aren't actively building quality relationships with their audience. And so, you know, I think that's absolutely incredible.
That's a really good observation. And to illustrate it in a different way, we have a customer base. We sell records to customers every day, all day, every day. It's a great, great thing. But we sort of view our customer or the person with which we need to nurture relationships as the artist. They're our conduit to the end sale. And so those are the relationships to build. Maybe only once or twice have we ever sent an email blast to our entire customer base because it's not really about them. They're going to buy the records from the artist they love. So let's nurture the artist they love. And the sales will come on the back end.
That's a perfect model. I love it.
Yeah, that's a really amazing way to look at it. Kind of going into that angle of things, each record is unique. And I'm guessing that some artists have figured out a way to go above and beyond in the recording that they're delivering. Do you have any stories of unique or creative experiences where the artists have gone the extra mile to really give something unique to their fans aside from one song that's just for them? I'm sure there's been some creative stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, every record we ship, barring few exceptions, will always have some sort of message from the artist to the person who bought the record so that the listener knows right away that we made it just for them. Those kinds of introductions or messages, boy, we've heard it all. We've heard all sorts of crazy stuff. In some regards, that's as important as the actual song is. Artists going above and beyond. Well, with the shut-in stuff, making recordings at home can be sort of a challenging thing. We try to encourage artists not to be too precious with it. If the dog barks, cool. The listener will actually think that's cool. So I know that there is some extra effort that goes into the artist when they're making their recordings to make sure they deliver something that the listener will really love.
I kind of like what you said about just what you mentioned purely about like the dog barking. There's so much behind, you know, there's so much music theory behind the imagery of music as well.
Yeah.
And so like, even though you're not, you know, it's not a video, what YouTube has started doing in the marketing world is really creating a television station. You know, it's a window into people's lives. And so like, you have the music aspect of it, but then there's also like the intimate things, you know, like for me, I grew up on Taking Back Sunday. And so I always loved hearing the stories between them and Brand New. Mm-hmm. It was the realism that brought it to life. And I think those little things that you mentioned, like dogs barking, it's like, you know, kids are going to put together in their mind. They're going to go like, oh, like they have a dog. This singer has a dog. Those are things that you'll never get out of something that's not this intimate, something that's not literally a, you know, it's kind of like a window into your home. And so I think that that's, again, just awesome.
I think that's cool too. And in some ways it has to do with the artist's understanding of what their brand is, the way people are going to perceive them. We had a shut-in session with this brilliant, brilliant artist named Corey Kilgannon. Really, really easygoing guy. He's been to the studio a handful of times and a brilliant songwriter, has a really, really great big fan base who loves him. And I happened to cut his session. I just loved his recordings because they were made in a way that's just exactly like his personality is. He just sort of hit record and then dinked around and did whatever he was going to do. And then he played one of the recordings that we shipped. he hit the last chords on his piano and his fiance walked in the front door and he's like, hey, babe, oh, I just finished the last one. This is the last recording. And then the tape stops. And of course I cut that. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's incredible.
That kind of stuff for the artist to know who they are and to commit that to the recording, all while not being overly precious or hard on themselves is a good skill for any artist to learn.
I really love that answer. What you just described, whether it's the artist, Corey, who greeted his fiance or the dog barking, that humanizes the artist in the eyes or the ears of the listener.
Yeah.
So it shows them that the artist isn't this, you know, superhuman person on a pedestal. The artist is another human just like them. And I think that's really cool.
Helps forge the relationship between the artist and the fan.
Yeah, exactly. I know you had shouted out earlier the URL for booking a shut-in session. So for anyone who wants to book a shut-in session, you can go to leestavall.com and click on the shut-in sessions button. But before we close this out, Aaron, do you have any final closing words, either from your experience running Least of All or from your experience in your years on the road that you would want to share with the listeners?
I do, particularly with shut-in sessions, but also with all the touring artists that have come through with live sessions at the studio. And then just my time as a performing musician myself, it's important for musicians to remember that this life that they have chosen for themselves is no picnic. It's not easy to do. It's so not easy to do that almost all of us fail at it. The artists that I've met that, in my view, are doing the best with the talents that they have don't make the word success have everything to do with money. Money doesn't make you happy, guaranteed, as the saying goes. The artists that do it for the love of doing it, that make the art because they love making the art, will always be happier and, by virtue of being happier, have more success in life. We meet a lot of artists that are more interested in my view anyway, that are interested in gaining a huge following and not interested in getting really good at singing or not interested in writing really, really great music. And it always makes me sad to see that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And that's, you know, so many artists basically just have their priorities backwards. Because if you get really good at writing songs or singing and put that out there, that's how to grow your fan base more effectively. Because otherwise, it's just you're swimming upstream, really.
Right. I mean, I get it. Somebody wants to be internet famous. Well, what's the vessel I can use with that? Well, I could be a singer. Let me try that. I don't know.
Yeah,
this is a whole other podcast, I'm sure.
I think we'll leave it at that and say one last shout out for Least of All, leestavall.com. You can sign up for a shut-in session. Aaron, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
So fun, you guys. Thank you for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
That does it for another episode of the Better Band Bureau podcast. Thanks so much to Aaron Zimmer of Least of All Sound Recordings for coming on the show to talk about both the recording process and some mindset tips for artists so they can sell more records, which really would apply to Least of All records or any record in general. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, and I gotta say, these interviews we've been doing have gone so well, and we just love doing them, so if there's someone you think we should interview on the podcast, please let us know. Just shoot an email over to james@thebetterbandbureau.com and we can chat about who you think we should ask to join us. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back with another episode next Tuesday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time. Until then, have an awesome week. Stay safe. And of course, as always, keep rocking.